Waymo robo-taxis come to Los Angeles, to which we say, good luck with traffic. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Lily Jamali. We're at the end of the week, which means we've got another episode of Marketplace Tech Bites Week in Review. Autonomous vehicle company Waymo has launched its driverless taxi service in Los Angeles, making it the fourth metropolitan city to host the Waymo One fleet. We'll look at how the company, owned by Google parent Alphabet, has managed to keep expanding while a major competitor has faltered. Plus, OpenAI, the company behind ChatGPT, has given CEO Sam Altman his board seat back. We'll look at who's cheering that development and who's not. But first, the big headline of the week is all about TikTok. On Wednesday, the House of Representatives overwhelmingly passed the Protecting Americans from Foreign Adversary-Controlled Applications Act. The bill says it would force TikTok's Chinese parent ByteDance to sell its stake in the U.S. version of the popular social media platform or face a ban from app stores. Paresh Dave, senior writer at Wired, joined me this week to discuss why policymakers have been pushing for action on TikTok for years.
TikTok continues to remain a threat in the views of some members of Congress. There's two major issues. One, there's the data security, sort of data privacy issue that, you know, TikTok is gobbling up tons of personal info, our faces, our likenesses of Americans, and that's potentially accessible to the Chinese government. And then two, there's sort of the misinformation, disinformation, information control, basically. Could China pull the levers on the algorithms on TikTok in some way to feed us content that causes a civil war in the US? That's the other big concern. And those threats haven't gone away.
Absolutely. I was just in Silicon Valley a couple of weeks ago, and it felt like every conversation that I had there eventually made its way to the topic of China and national security. You know, I also wonder from you, what's your sense of how American tech executives are viewing this debate? You know, it's nice to get rid of competition, you know, or even buy your competition. But this also could open the door, if it moves forward, to more regulation, which we know they don't like.
Yeah, but I think, you know, Meta has been pushing for TikTok to be banned. They do also want to see tech regulation. So however it gets done, whether there's more regulation on TikTok or TikTok has to sell to US interests or TikTok goes away completely, Meta benefits. And there's always been an argument that the biggest companies sort of can weather regulations in a way that smaller companies can't. I mean, TikTok is huge, but isn't necessarily Meta, Facebook huge. So, you know, I think many companies are okay with this leading to maybe some sort of regulation that applies to many different companies and not just TikTok.
So, Paresh, how does this end? Because when former President Trump tried to ban TikTok a couple of years ago, the initial push was for an acquisition by Microsoft, and that came off like a giveaway, right? And then, you know, I'm thinking MySpace now. What if you are acquired and you ruin the app, right? Mm-hmm. What if the person who buys this kind of makes it not nearly as appealing as it is now?
Well, it's unfortunately cynical, but I view this all as sort of election year campaigning. And I don't think that there's going to be a change coming. You know, I don't think this will pass the Senate. We've already seen Senator Rand Paul say that this bill makes no sense whatsoever because we're sort of doing the thing that we complain about China doing, which is censoring technology, censoring platforms, censoring speech by forcing TikTok to sell to U.S. investors. So I don't know if this, you know, it just doesn't feel like this leads anywhere or gets done. And we've seen talk about other types of regulation, like a privacy bill, just go nowhere. And it doesn't feel like there's any more new momentum to get this done.
Yeah, and this notion of a privacy bill keeps coming up in this debate. But you're absolutely right. It just hasn't happened, and the prospects are not looking too good. All eyes on the Senate, though, for sure, which is right now, I would say, giving off, we're looking into it vibes, as in, go away and leave us alone. We shall see. All right, well, on to our next story. Sam Altman has been reinstated to OpenAI's board of directors. This is several months after being fired and then quickly rehired as CEO, as you recall, because I think he ruined Thanksgiving for every tech reporter in Silicon Valley. He now has his board seat back. So what does this mean for where OpenAI goes from here?
Yeah, I'll never forget that Thanksgiving. For OpenAI, you know, they're clearly trying to move past this as fast as possible. You could see that by the way that they announced Sam Altman's return to the board and their new board members, and the summary of an investigation. So they announced it late on a Friday, which is a great time to, you know, bury news. They also just released, like I said, a summary of this investigation that they commissioned a law firm to do over what happened over Thanksgiving and why all that drama came to pass, rather than releasing the whole report. There's no new commitment to transparency in what they announced. They said, you know, they said there's some governance changes, they're going to do better going forward, but nothing that sort of leads to more transparency around this very important company.
Yeah. Well, Elon Musk just sued OpenAI for veering away from its original nonprofit mission. Folks will recall that Elon Musk was one of the co-founders of the company before stepping away a couple years ago. Is that mission effectively dead, the one that Elon Musk keeps outlining?
I don't think the mission is dead. I mean, at the end of the day, Elon Musk, Sam Altman, and others came together to create a company that was a counterbalance to Google and other big companies that were working on AI technologies. And they sort of wanted to do it in the most beneficially way possible. Those two parts of it, I don't think have changed. What's changed is, you know, OpenAI isn't open sourcing its models anymore. It isn't making them as available. And their argument is that there's a safety concern around that, and that there could be sort of abuse if they allowed too much information about how they were going about developing this. And in some ways, you could argue that goes back to the mission of trying to do this in the safest way possible.
Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, Elon Musk said his AI startup xAI would open source its LLM chatbot, which is called Grok. Mm-hmm. And this is days after this lawsuit happens. So this is a move that has been perceived as, you know, it could give the public free access to experiment with the code behind this technology and kind of gets xAI. It aligns them in some respects with Meta, for one. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, they had no, or Elon Musk had no choice but to open source it after he sued OpenAI. It would look kind of weird for him to say, oh, OpenAI, you have to open source your models, but my AI company doesn't have to. So, you know, it makes sense that he's doing that. And the other part of this that's, you know, worth noting is that, you know, the EU just made great progress on the AI Act. Which now looks like it'll go into effect, you know, starting next year. And similar to the voluntary commitments in the US, you know, it calls for companies to share more about how they go about developing their models and how they go about making sure that the models are safe and that they're considering all the risks and mitigating those risks in some cases. You know, the world is trending that direction anyways. And so it's, you know, Elon's move here is not really a surprise.
We'll be right back. You're listening to Marketplace Tech. I'm Lily Jamali. We're back with Wired senior writer Paresh Dave. Our final story, Waymo, the autonomous driving tech company owned by Alphabet, has started driverless taxi services here in Los Angeles. This started on Thursday. What is this going to look like, Paresh?
Well, I'm curious to hear if you've taken a ride and what it's been like. But I took one in LA back in November, and it was pretty smooth. It did almost get sideswiped on a left turn where a car sort of veered into our lane. But smooth overall. And it even handled a roundabout, which, you know, you don't see too many of up here in San Francisco. But in some ways, LA is easier for Waymo to navigate than San Francisco, where it's sort of been the initial home base for Waymo, and where they're giving tens of thousands of rides each week. LA, you know, wider streets, less crazy double parking. Pedestrians are not as much of a thing. You know, cyclists are a thing, but not as much of a thing, at least in the areas where Waymo is launching in LA. So like I said, you know, this sort of validates Waymo's development process, which is, you know, start in the hard city like San Francisco first, and then move to other cities, and excited to see where it goes.
Yeah. Plus, you're sitting in traffic all the time here in LA. So, you know, what can go wrong there? It is safer when you think about it. I have not taken a ride in a Waymo myself, but I'm always struck when I'm in San Francisco, how ubiquitous these vehicles are. And I lived in the Bay Area, and I just, you know, quickly got used to it when I lived there. But now that I don't live there, I'm just like, wow, they are all over the place. And it kind of, you know, I note it every single time that I visit. The thing is, you know, there are going to be some limitations. These cannot go on the freeway in Los Angeles for now. The fleet is also pretty small. It's going to be less than 50 cars. But accidents are still happening. These are mostly fender benders, but, you know, there have been some small injuries to people.
Absolutely. And, you know, we can't forget that what happened last October with Cruise, one of Waymo's rivals, where the car basically dragged a pedestrian, you know, tens of feet, caused very serious injuries. You know, the person was hospitalized for a couple of months, and it led to Cruise basically temporarily shutting down and really cleaning house and resetting its operations. Waymo so far has not had a kind of catastrophic incident like that, but you know, it's possible it could happen at any point. But I think that's why you see the small fleet being very slow and deliberate, and they've done this big marketing push in LA, but I was kind of surprised that they only have 50,000-ish people on their wait list in LA compared to I think 200,000 in San Francisco. You know, LA is huge, 10 million people, right, in greater LA. I think there's still people figuring out what Waymo is. And part of that is that they're going very small and deliberate, trying not to go too fast and run into the problems that Cruise did.
Yes. And Cruise, of course, is the subsidiary of General Motors. The future of that company, you know, really unclear right now, but not looking too good. Well, Paresh, before I let you go, I know you've been writing about this Reddit IPO that's coming up. Give me the elevator pitch.
So, yeah, I would say the thing to look ahead to next week is Reddit's IPO. It'll probably be the talk of the town. They're expected to set final prices on Wednesday and then start trading on the New York Stock Exchange on Thursday if all goes as planned. I think there's will be big concerns from investors about what that volatility will be like on the first day, because Reddit is allowing users to buy into the IPO, and then they can sell immediately. There's no sort of lockup period where they're required to hold on to shares for a while for those users that buy into the IPO. So it could be a potentially wild day if Reddit becomes a meme stock.
Yeah. And ending the wildest, or the longest, I should say, the longest windup to an IPO that I've ever seen.
Yeah,
we've been talking about this thing for 2 years.
it's been interesting because it's sort of allowed a peek into the company in a way that you typically don't get because they've revised their investor pitch several times over the last couple of years.
That was Paresh Dave at Wired. You can find the full video of this episode of Marketplace Tech Bytes Week in Review on our YouTube channel, Marketplace APM. And subscribe if you haven't already to watch us every Friday. Daniel Shin produced this episode. Jesus Alvarado and Rosie Hughes also produce our show. Lydia Ayano is our intern. Becca Weinman is our engineer. Daisy Palacios is our senior producer. Kelly Silvera is our executive producer. I'm Lily Jamali, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.